So we want to do the kinds of things that God expects us to be doing. And one of the ways that I have concluded we can learn what we ought to be doing, and even how we ought to be doing it, is to look at what Jesus did. Now we've kind of taken that phrase that everybody wore on their wrist, WWJD, what would Jesus do? And I've changed that a little bit. So I've tried to make it, what did Jesus do? The best way to understand that is to simply read through the Gospels. We started talking about the different contexts in which Jesus acted. And the first context that we noted deals with Jesus and his interaction with crowds. Now, there were crowds around Jesus. As you read through the Gospels, it just seems like everywhere he went, there was a crowd around him. And there were times when Jesus even absented himself from the crowd. He went out to a desert place so he could pray. The press of the crowd was bearing down on him, and he needed some time away. And we'll talk a little bit about what he did when he took that time away. He went and talked to God and prayed about his personal ministry. So we're going to start by looking at how Jesus interacted with crowds. Now, this is a slightly different approach than what I generally do in a sermon. This is a process-oriented approach this morning. What I'm going to try to do is walk you through the process that I think we ought to use if we're going to figure out what Jesus did when he interacted with the crowds. So, what I've done is I've started to think about some of the different crowds that Jesus was around. And I broke that down into three different categories. First, Jesus was around crowds that came together for some entirely different purpose than to be around Jesus. Right? He was around a crowd when he went into Jerusalem at the Passover. The people that were in Jerusalem at the Passover weren't there because Jesus was going to be there. They had no idea that Jesus was going to be there. So they had gathered for some reason other than attending to Jesus. There's a second group that Jesus was around, big crowds, and those crowds came together because of Jesus. You're familiar with how, as Jesus went throughout the region of Judea, there were a lot of crowds that followed him, in part because he was doing great miracles. And sometimes there were so many crowds around him that the apostles were shocked and couldn't understand how Jesus was going to interact with these crowds. So that's the second kind of crowd. First kind, crowds that came together that didn't have any interest in Jesus. They didn't know he was even going to be there. Second group that was around Jesus was the crowds that gathered because Jesus was there. And then there's a third group. Sometimes Jesus was around crowds because he called the crowd together. He brought them together for some reason. He preached the Great Sermon on the Mountain because he had gathered this crowd together so that he could teach them. So three different kinds of crowds. And then when we go back and we start looking at those crowds, you know, there were within a crowd, you generally have a lot of different kinds of people. A crowd doesn't have a homogeneous approach to very many things. So let's think about the crowds that Jesus encountered when he, for instance, went into Jerusalem at the Passover feast. There were some who were uninterested in Jesus. They didn't have any idea who he was. They didn't care. And they weren't really there trying to learn something about him. There were other people in that crowd who were eavesdroppers. They were just kind of standing off to the side a little bit, and they were hearing what people were saying. That they even heard what Jesus said. So they're the eavesdroppers. And then in a crowd, you would encounter some people who were there not because of what Jesus said, not because Jesus was there, but when Jesus began to talk, they suddenly wanted to hear more. They were seekers. They were looking for what Jesus was saying. And then sometimes the crowd was made up of some seekers and some who were opposed to Jesus, right? It's like you had a bifurcated crowd. On this side of the room, people wanted to know about Jesus. On this side of the room, people only wanted to trap Jesus. And then sometimes the crowd was made up entirely of people that were Jesus' opponents. So that just seems to be a way to understand this crowd that Jesus would encounter who had come together for some other reason. But he found in that crowd different kinds of people. Now, again, let's talk about this second kind of crowd that Jesus is around. This is the crowd that came together because Jesus was there. And you would have different kinds of people in this crowd as well. You would have some people who were eavesdroppers, just like you had in the first kind of crowd. You would have some people who were seekers. They really wanted to listen. You had some people who were kind of mixed, seekers and opponents. And then you had some people who were just opponents. So some people came there because they wanted to trap Jesus. Then let's think about the third kind of crowd, the crowds that Jesus called together. Now, in this kind of crowd, you don't tend to have many who are not concerned about Jesus. They wouldn't have come. You won't have very many who are just eavesdroppers who are there and they're kind of listening with one ear. This is a group that Jesus has called together so that he can teach. So you'd have seekers, you'd have mixed seekers and opponents, and then you would have some who were opponents. Jesus says, I'm going to be teaching at 7:30 on Monday night out by the mountainside. You had some people who would say, I'm going to go there so I can trap him. You had some people who would say, I'm going to be there because I really want to know what this man has to say. Now, so that's the characteristics of the crowds. Then you have Jesus' responses to those different kinds of crowds. So let's go back. Now we're looking at the crowd that came together for some other purpose. They didn't care about Jesus. They didn't even know he was going to be there. And Jesus might have done no teaching at all. Sometimes Jesus was in crowds And it wasn't the place, it wasn't the time, so Jesus didn't do anything. In fact, there were times when Jesus was around some crowds and he just left. Sometimes Jesus taught an individual in the crowd. So he had a conversation that wasn't intended for the whole crowd. He's having a conversation with an individual. Sometimes Jesus had the opportunity to address the whole crowd, and he taught the whole crowd. Sometimes he didn't say anything, but by virtue of what he did, you know that he approved of what they were doing. So it's not just that Jesus always spoke. Sometimes he did things. Then you have times that Jesus didn't speak, but by virtue of what he did, he let them know that he condemned them. And then you have times when Jesus actually verbally rebuked this crowd. So you have a lot of different possible actions that Jesus might have taken. Now, what I've done is I put this into a spreadsheet. I do everything in spreadsheets. Okay. This is just my training. So up here, I've listed the kind of crowd, then the kind of people that were in the crowd, and the possible reactions that Jesus might have had. Now, I have all of this organized in one big, huge spreadsheet, but for the sake of this discussion, I broke it up into three so that we could see it. And I apologize that the print is still even a little bit small. So again, you have the crowd that assembled because they knew Jesus was there, the different kinds of people, and the different kinds of responses that Jesus had to the crowd. Same thing for that third group, the crowd that was called together by Jesus, different kinds of people, and on the left side, you see the different kinds of ways that Jesus addressed them. Now, sometimes Jesus didn't, or there were some crowds where a particular kind of response never happened. So I eliminated that from the spreadsheet. So, having set the stage, now how do we use this to figure out how Jesus interacted with the crowds? So, the next step that I took was I looked at a harmony of the Gospels. You have four Gospels. Sometimes all four Gospels talk about an event. Sometimes the event is just recorded in one of the Gospels. So I took a harmony of the Gospels so that I every time an event occurred, I would get all of the information about that event, and then I'd figure out what kind of crowd was it, what kind of people were in the crowd, and what was Jesus' response. So let me show you how that works. The first thing that I looked at was the baptism of Jesus. This is the first time that you see Jesus, or the first time that it's recorded, that Jesus has an interaction with the crowd. Now, let's look at the biblical information, and the harmony of the Gospels is going to tell me that it's in Matthew 3, it's in Mark 1, it's in Luke 3, and it's in John 1. So let's look at all of those different mentions of this event in all four of the Gospels. We'll start with the book of Matthew. Matthew 3 at verse 13 beginning, it says, Jesus came from Galilee to the Jordan to John to be baptized by him. John would have prevented him, saying, I need to be baptized of you, and you come to me. Jesus answered, Let it be so now, for thus it is fitting for us to fulfill all righteousness. Then John consented. When Jesus was baptized, immediately he went up from the water. Behold, the heavens were opened to him, and the Spirit of God, and he saw the Spirit of God descending like a dove and coming to rest upon him. Behold, a voice from heaven said, This is my beloved Son, in whom I am well pleased. Second time that this event is discussed is in Mark. This time it's in the first chapter. In those days, Jesus came from Nazareth to Galilee and was baptized by John in the Jordan. When he came up out of the water, immediately he saw the heavens being torn open and the Spirit descending upon him like a dove. And a voice from heaven, You are my beloved Son, in whom I am well pleased. Next time this is discussed is in the book of Luke. This is in Luke 3. When all the people were baptized, and when John had been baptizing and was praying, the heavens were opened. The Holy Spirit descended on him in bodily form like a dove, and a voice from heaven, You are my beloved Son, in whom I am well pleased. Then the last one is in the book of John. This is John 1. The next day, John saw Jesus coming toward him, and he said, Behold, the Lamb of God who takes away the sin of the world. This is he of whom I said, After me comes a man who ranks before me because he was before me. I myself did not know him, but for this purpose I came, baptizing with water, that he might be revealed to Israel. John bore witness. I saw the Spirit descend from heaven like a dove, and it remained on him. I myself did not know him, but he who sent me to baptize with water said to me, He on whom you see the Spirit descending and remains, this is he who baptizes with the Holy Spirit. I have seen and have borne witness that this is the Son of God. So, we're going to take a teaching approach here. I'm going to do the first instance, and then together we'll do the next instance of Jesus interacting with a crowd, and then you will have the opportunity to go home, find all of the information, and you can begin to fill out this kind of information on your own. So it's a I do, we do, you do. Called direct instruction. Okay? So how would we characterize this in terms of the crowd? Was this crowd there because Jesus was there? No. Was this a crowd that Jesus called to get? No. It was a crowd that gathered because of what John was doing. So we're talking about this kind of crowd, the crowd that was assembled for some other reason than Jesus. In this case, it was to hear about John's baptism. What did Jesus do? Did Jesus interact with the crowd at all? Or was Jesus around the crowd and his interaction was with John? Well, it seems to me that in terms of what Jesus did, Jesus spoke to an individual. This is the kind of crowd he was with. Jesus was talking with an individual. Now, this individual that he was talking to was a seeker. This was somebody who was concerned about the one who was coming, the one that he was preparing the way for. So he is a seeker, and Jesus has a conversation with him. See, the reason that all of this is important, if we took the statements that Jesus made, that were made to John, suffer it to be so now, for thus it fulfills all righteousness, and we were to say Jesus was talking to a crowd of opponents that he had called together, we'd be missing the context of the statement that Jesus made to the crowd. And context turns out to be, in my mind, very important in understanding the way that Jesus related to crowds. Okay? So that's where I would put this instance. I would say that this instance of Jesus responding to, or Jesus in the crowd, he taught an individual who was a seeker. So I'm going to put all the passages that we read in this box. And I'm just going to keep going until I have filled out the entirety of the harmony of the Gospels. So let's do another one. This time we'll do one together. The next one I'd like to look at is Jesus at the wedding feast in Cana. Okay? What kind of crowd do you think this was? Well, let's read about Jesus at the wedding feast in Cana. On the third day, this is only recorded in John, by the way, so that's why this harmony of the Gospels is important. On the third day, there was a wedding in Cana in Galilee, and the mother of Jesus was there. Jesus was invited to the wedding with his disciples. When the wine ran out, the mother of Jesus said to him, "They have no wine." Jesus said to her, "Woman, what does this have to do with me? My hour has not yet come." His mother said to the servants, "Do whatever he tells you." Now there were six stone water jars there for the Jewish rite of purification. Each one held about 20 to 30 gallons. Jesus said to the servants, "Fill the jars with water." They filled them up to the brim. He said to them, "Now draw some out and take it to the master of the feast." So they took it. When the master of the feast tasted the water, now become wine, he did not know where it came from, though the servants who had drawn the water knew, the master of the feast called the bridegroom, said to him, "Everyone serves the good wine first. When people have drunk freely, then the poor wine. But you have kept the good wine until now." This is the first of his signs Jesus did in Cana. In Galilee, and manifested his glory, and the disciples believed in him. So what kind of group is Jesus addressing here? Did they come together for some other reason? Were they there because Jesus was going to be there, or were they there because Jesus had called them there? What kind of group are we talking about? Anybody? First kind of group. So we're talking about this kind of group. They were there for some other reason other than Jesus. Why were they there? The wedding. Okay? What kind of people are discussed here? Is it people that were uninterested in Jesus? Is it people that were eavesdroppers? Is it people that were seekers, mixed opponents and seekers, or were they opponents? What kind of people did Jesus interact with? Who did he interact with? Okay, his disciples were there, but John doesn't record him saying anything to his disciples. They observed, so the disciples, we might say, were eavesdroppers. Okay, who else did Jesus talk to? His mother and the servants. Okay. Let's take those two people. Where would you put his mother? What kind of person was his mother?
She's almost an eavesdropper, too.
We could say eavesdropper, could say seeker. Okay. She has some idea that Jesus can do something about this situation. So I think maybe she's a seeker. That's the way I would do it. What about the servant? He didn't really directly interact with the servants. He told them to fill the jar with water, but that really wasn't much of a teaching opportunity. I'm sorry? Yeah, they're probably uninterested in Jesus. So Jesus' response has to be understood in terms of who he spoke with. So in my mind, Jesus' primary interaction here is with his mother. It's an individual, and she was a I said she was a seeker. Bob was thinking maybe an eavesdropper. It's not hard and fast, okay? I think she was a seeker. So I think this is the way that you would characterize, this is the way that we would characterize this event. Now, if, as I said before, if you take this harmony of the Gospels, and you start looking at all of the events that are recorded, you find his conversations with Andrew and Simon Peter. You find his conversations with Philip and Nathaniel, but those apparently are not in a crowd. Then you had the marriage feast. Then you had the Passover and the cleaning of the temple. That's one of those things where Jesus was with a crowd. So if you're going to go through and do all of this, that's the way that you would continue to characterize these people. Now, why is that important? I find myself in a crowd sometimes. And sometimes the crowd that I'm in didn't come together because of Jesus. They had no relationship with Jesus. They didn't even know he was going to be there. What kind of opportunities does that present to me? Now, I could be like the fella who's become kind of an internet sensation. He goes to football games and he's always behind the home team's end of the field. And whenever they're gonna kick a field goal, he holds up a sign that says John 3:16. That's one approach. Understand, nobody is there looking for information about that at the time. That's an approach. And he would probably look at me and say, "You don't care about God, because if you really cared about God, you would be holding up a sign too." There are other times when I go to places and there are a lot of people that are there, like you go to the fair. Right? And you've all been to the fair, and sometimes you see the people who are set up and they have a sign that says, typically their sign says, "Are you going to hell? Are you sure you're going to heaven?" And they want to talk to you about Jesus. So what they're doing is they're trying to find those people that are seekers so they can talk to them. That's an approach. And they're going to look at me and say, well, you don't care about God because you don't do that. That's true. I didn't do that, but that doesn't mean that I didn't care about God. I just had a different approach, perhaps, to being in this crowd. And any of these approaches might be reasonable. Okay? Sometimes Jesus didn't do anything. He didn't teach. Wasn't the time. Jesus did have a conversation with his mother at the wedding feast in Cana. But he said, and Kim and I talk about this a lot, he said, you don't know what you're asking. This is not the time. Now, most of the people that were in the crowd had no idea what Jesus had done. But that's okay. So we're going to spend our lives trying to do the kinds of things that Jesus did. We have a lot of different approaches that are open to us. We're going to interact with crowds that are made up of different kinds of people. And we have to tailor our approach to the kinds of people that we're around. That doesn't mean we change the gospel. It just means we tailor our approach. Well, we haven't talked about how to become a Christian. We haven't talked about how to put on Jesus in baptism. I think you understand that ultimately that's what we're going to talk about. We're going to talk about becoming one of God's people. And becoming one of God's people means that we're free to behave the same way that Jesus did. So if you want to put Jesus on in baptism, we'll help you to do that. If you have put Jesus on in baptism, but you kind of lost focus and you went back to the way that you were before you put Jesus on, we want to help you as well. We'll help you put on Jesus. We'll help you return to it. Of course, one involves baptism. One involves praying and talking to God about the difficulties that you've had, confessing your faults one to another. That's what James says.